with their 6th annual concert for the young and young at heart on Saturday, January 21st at Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign. Featured are excerpts from Mozart's The Magic Flute for Winds and Shadow Puppets, music by P.D.Q. Bach, and Michael Dougherty's What That Spell for Barbie Sopranos and Rock and Roll Chamber Orchestra. Information at 355-9077 or at prairieensemble.org. Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from Strawberry Fields in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields Catering Department now offers boxed lunches for professional meetings or casual lunchtime gatherings. Strawberry Fields, 328-1655.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today. Christine Wicker is a journalist whose beat has been religion. Covering that beat, she began to notice a change was going on in modern American faith. She saw, in her words, people cobbling together spiritual lives more freewheeling than anything seen before. And that led her to look into magic. It was an enterprise, she says, that was met with derision by some. You'll be on a journey, they said, but don't expect to arrive at the heart of darkness. The epicenter of silly will be more like it. But Christine Wicker was not to be deterred. She plunged ahead, and among the discoveries she made, magic is not only of ancient and illustrious pedigree, not merely an astonishingly alive and widespread way of thinking, but also a valuable, even irreplaceable part of human experience. Christine Wicker is the author of Not in Kansas Anymore, a curious tale of how magic is transforming America, and she is our guest this afternoon in this portion of the program. Listeners, you can join our discussion. I invite your questions and comments. Join us with a telephone call. Here are the numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Toll free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Christine Wicker is also the author of Lilydale, the true story of the town that talks to the dead. She's a former reporter for the Dallas Morning News, where her work received many awards, including the Clarion Award, the Wilbur Award, and the Sunday Magazine Editor's Prize for feature writing. You'll find her on the web at www.christinewicker.com. Again, the phone numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Christine Wicker, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
I'm happy to be here.
Maybe we could start with the point you make early in the book that I mentioned just now in my introduction. That is that magic is not only of ancient and illustrious pedigree, not merely an astonishingly alive and widespread way of thinking, but also a valuable, even irreplaceable part of human experience. Would you talk about the value of magic in human experience?
You know, that was a big surprise to me. I came at this having no idea that I would come to that conclusion. I saw it as just, when I started seeing this magical thinking around me, I didn't understand it. And so I thought, what's going on here? And like most of the people who live in the Western world, my primary orientation is to look at things in a sort of pseudo-scientific way. One author said, all of us now have a little scientist living inside of us. You know, we used to say we had a devil and an angel. Well, now we have a devil, an angel, and a little scientist living within us who tells us how to look at the world. And I'm very much in that that kind of person. So, but what I began to realize as I talked to people about, now, let me define magic for you as I did, because I did this very broadly. I defined it as all that which science will not allow us to think anymore. In fact, these ways of thinking have always been the ways that human beings have thought. And we are the first generation, the first group of people, since it's all of us generations alive today, who are being asked to give that up to the degree that we are being asked to. The reason that I say that it's irreplaceable is magic says life is connected. What happens to you matters. It has meaning. It has purpose. You have meaning. You have purpose. Your perceptions have value. Now, what I found out is that in very kind of otherworldly, but also in very mundane ways, it is part of human experience to have those epiphanies, those aha moments, those times when you just think, how did this happen? You know, and what we do now is we say, wasn't that a coincidence? Isn't that odd? But when you hear that tone in somebody's voice, you know they really mean something else. We're just not allowed to say it anymore.
Hmm. One of the things that you write about quite a bit in Not in Kansas Anymore is enchantment. Talk yeah. about that.
You know, what I found out as a journalist is if you want to understand, I use the word enchantment in a number of different ways because it's a very big, flexible word. If you want to understand something, you have to let it enchant you, to enter into something that you don't understand, that's very foreign to you. You have to become enchanted. When we become enchanted, say, with an idea or with a goal or with a vision, a thing that we want to be, a vision even of ourselves, that enchantment fires us up. It causes us to move from who we were to something else. And my thesis, as you know, is that that's one of the reasons why all over the world, parents everywhere teach their children enchanting stories, fairy tales, fantasy tales. And when I realized that this was so, I thought, why is that? Why do they do this? Because they often have some amount of dissonance about that. They think, should I really be teaching my child there's a Santa Claus? But we sort of look down on those people who don't teach their children, and we think that they're taking something away from their children. Because the ability to be enchanted is an important thing for a human being. It's what allows us to have vision. It's what allows us to move beyond ourselves into something that we can imagine, that we can see, that takes us beyond life just as a kind of mundane and material experience.
Hmm. You say from the outset you had the sense that the people you were talking to were behaving within an enchantment you were not part of. Did this project require you to try to, at least temporarily, suspend your disbelief, turn off the little scientist?
Yes. I found that very difficult to do, and most of us find it very difficult to do. But what I began to understand is that these people were part of an enchantment that I found difficult to get into. And as the book goes on, I make some success in, I have some success in getting into it. But not like they do. But I realized that all of us must decide what we will notice, what we will perceive from the moment we're born. We're being taught what to look at and what not to look at. So as I was going among these people who believed in a magical universe, I often realized that their experiences and my experiences were sometimes not so different. It's simply that I didn't give myself license to go with them. And I love to tell the story. And I think that we've lost something. I think I've lost something in that I'm not able to be quite so enchanted. And I love the example of Florence Nightingale that I cite in the book. Florence Nightingale lived in an age when you could be more easily enchanted, I think. And she was enchanted when she perceived that God said to her in a vision, do the work. Before that, Florence Nightingale was a pretty ordinary middle-class English woman. She didn't even know what the work was. But that idea, that vision, that enchantment caused her to change the world.
Hmm. People talk about this in terms of being called as well, religious people.
Very much.
Yeah, and I suppose in a way it is a way to do something that is difficult, but you feel something must be done. It's kind of a Here's my scientist talking. It's kind of permission.
Yes.
To go out into the world.
And it's so funny that you would say that, because that's your scientist talking, because that's what I found all the time, is that I wanted to find a psychological, a scientific, you know, I wanted to bring it into the world that I inhabit more comfortably. But, you know, that in itself has a big price.
Hmm.
Because, see, here, I think one of the reasons we don't have very many heroes, we say, where have all the heroes gone? Well, you can't be a hero without a great aspiration. You know?
Hmm.
You've got to have some greater sense of yourself. And what I began to realize is that this modern life, this little scientist within us, has diminished us. It diminishes everything. It negates everything. I mean, we really, even the attitude of altruism, we now say sort of cynically, well, no one does, everyone does things for themselves. Well, that may be true. I'm not really arguing what's true and what's not. What I began to argue in this book is what's good for people, for human beings, and what's not good for them. You know, I talk about, now I've forgotten his name, a mathematician who looked ahead, saw what was happening, and he was filled with dread, because he knew that for human beings to inhabit a world that was soulless, that had no meaning, had no pattern, had no connection, was going to be a terrible thing. And so in some ways, I started out thinking, okay, I'm going to be dealing with these very weird people who are, you know, doing these very weird things, sort of a throwback to a more ignorant time. And I came out really thinking, aren't people clever? Aren't they smart? By and large, in large numbers, human beings, almost secretly, surreptitiously, without even admitting it to themselves, are not willing to give up that sense of meaning that all other generations had, and that I think maybe we need in order to be human beings with hope.
Hmm. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Christine Wicker is our guest this afternoon. She's a journalist. Her latest book is Not in Kansas Anymore, A Curious Tale of How Magic is Transforming America. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. We have a listener waiting to talk with us in Champaign County on line one. Hi.
Hi, I'll give this a shot.
Okay.
I came out of an extremely sort of 19th-century logical positivist kind of scientism, but at the same time, a very Gothic Catholicism, and I have always lived sort of on that divide, and I think that's kind of what you're sort of getting at in some way. But it seems to me that I don't see how this is particularly any kind of new thing, in the sense that, you know, if you look at some of the poll numbers, I think 70% of Americans believe in angels, and I think the figures are similar on miracles. So that's all magic and miracles. And what I was thinking of asking you before I understood more of what you were talking about was, since you're down in Texas, it's sort of the home ground of sort of this hyper-Calvinist increase religion, where, you know, you bless your money and it multiplies like loaves and fishes. And I see this as being very, very pernicious and not very magical at all. It's sort of reducing some kind of simple avarice to, and giving it a blessing of some kind of mystical Christianity. And I'm very worried about it, actually. And I think it's not that different from a lot of approaches in other religions, it seems. But this seems to be a particularly virulent form. So I came into this thinking I wanted to raise that issue, and I don't know how you would respond to that. I particularly was impressed by, I was listening to a radio show on Martin Luther King Day weekend, and I hear this kind of discussion propounded by African Americans, when it seems to me that they should have been talking about whether, you know, our senator, who is African American in this state of Illinois, would rise to the occasion and actually, you know, filibuster Alito, which I see as much more... I mean, obviously, I'm digressing wildly, but I sort of want that to become viral and somebody start talking about that. I think it's related because what I see is that it's not just the African American church. In fact, this evangelical increase religion is sort of one of the most cross-cultural phenomenons that's happening. I think I've laid a lot out there. So
yeah, it's very interesting. It's particularly interesting to me because my next book is going to be on an evangelical, a conservative evangelical megachurch in Texas. So I do think along the same lines that you do. I think what you're talking about is prosperity gospel, that whole idea that people, that God wants people to be rich. And I have... I've thought about that a lot, and in fact, one of the conjure docs, a Pentecostal preacher and a guy who does African American magic called hoodoo, is into the prosperity gospel. I have two thoughts about that. One is that I am with you if you're talking to a middle class, upper middle class, relatively privileged group. I think they need to go beyond that, and I used to think that it was just an exploitation of African-Americans and Hispanic and groups that really haven't arrived and are still struggling to get their place in society. I thought that, too, was an exploitation, but I don't anymore. And it has to do with that idea of empowerment and enchantment. I think that one of the reasons that people in the middle class and white people are able to achieve what they achieve is because we have a vision of it. We know that it can be done. And that keeps us working because we have to work really hard also. And I don't know about you, but I worked a long time and didn't make very much money and didn't have very much success. And so you have to have this tremendous drive to get anywhere, no matter who you are. And so my feeling, and this is kind of off too, but about prosperity gospel, is that I'm not as quick to condemn it, particularly in black churches, as I used to be. I think it might be a really good thing because... Or if you're an African-American in this society, you probably need to think God wants you to prosper because hardly anybody else does.
Mm. What about the flip side of that, though, is we're being punished by hurricanes, by plagues, because we're sinners?
Well, you know, that's a real old one, too. We've always looked to God to mete out some kind of justice. And... I, of course, don't think that that's what's happening. And it's interesting that you're bringing religion without ever having asked me what most people ask, which is what's the difference between religion and magic. We've gone straight into religion. I find it difficult to tell much difference very often between magical thinking and religion because they have so many things in common. I don't think it's a very good idea to think that New Orleans was punished because of its sinfulness. But there is, even in magical doctrine, these magical groups that I've talked about in the book, there's a sense that you can be cursed, that cosmic forces can be turned against you by your own actions or by the actions of others.
Hmm. You know, the second chapter of your book begins with these two sentences. I don't believe in magic, of course. Hardly anybody does, but we all live by it. Given we've mentioned class distinctions in religion, maybe you would give us some sense of how how magic permeates our lives, no matter who we are.
Well, one that I hear a lot, I would disagree with your caller in that it is true that magic has always been around. And in fact, it's been a much stronger undercurrent in human history than a lot of people realize, and a lot of scholars are starting to look at that now. But it appears to me, and there are statistics to back it up, it appears that magical beliefs are rising in the society. And how I first saw it was not just with the angel craze, people believing in angels, which is real common, but I would hear things in conversation, and here's this one, maybe you've heard it too, there's no such thing as a coincidence. Now, people say that all the time now. That is a stunning statement. If they really believe that, that's just extraordinary. And that's what I mean. A lot of people think that we all say, here's one thing that I found. also, when I went out on book tour, and I was doing the book on the spiritualists who believe that you can talk to the dead, or they never call them the dead, they call them spirits. I went out on this book tour, and I would be at the front of the bookstore, say, you know, how they set up the books, and everybody's embarrassed because you're there, and they have to walk by you. Well, people would walk by me, and they'd say, what have you got? And I'd tell them, and they'd laugh, and they'd say, oh, nothing like that's ever happened to me. Then they'd walk away. About 10 minutes, they'd come back and they'd say, you know, I told you that nothing had ever happened to me, but let me tell you the story. They would proceed to tell me the most fantastic, fabulous, magical story of something that had happened to them. And what I always wanted to say is, how in the world did you forget that? Well, then I would find in my own life, things had happened to me that we just push them to the back of our minds. We just say, well, that didn't happen. Many people who've read this book have said to me, you know, I didn't think I believed in all of this, but now that I've read the book, I see that I do. It's in for many of us who really say we don't believe, and honestly we don't believe, but there's an undercurrent of it. You know, for instance, my husband was going to go away on a trip. He was going to Saudi Arabia just after they had pulled the people and Americans. They pulled the Americans out, and here my husband's going the wrong way. And I was really scared. I did not want him, as we got to the airport, to kiss me and say, you know, I really love you. I was superstitious. Mm. I didn't want that. How many people miss a plane and think, oh, my gosh, I wonder if that plane's going to go down? I mean, we even see it in the newspaper all the time. In fact, we used to joke about it. We called it death by irony. You know, it was ironic that he moved to this town to be safe, and now he's been killed. So I have this great fear of death by irony. You know, just little things. Like, I tell the story, too, of my friend who always prays to St. Anthony when she loses something. And her friend, her cousin lost a diamond earring, so she told her cousin, pray to St. Anthony. So the cousin prays to St. Anthony. Sure enough, she finds the diamond earring in a place that she's looked, and she just never saw it before, and there it is. So she calls my friend back, and she says, I prayed to St. Anthony, and he found it. And I found it, I found it. My friend's telling me this story. She's laughing, and she says, the problem is now she'll think St. Anthony did it. And I said, well, didn't he? And she said, no, of course not. And I said, well, why did you tell her? And she said, well, because it always works. So that's kind of what I mean. You know, we have these little things in our lives that we don't really believe in, but they work, so we do them.
Yeah.
Look at sports teams.
Yeah, their lucky socks or...
Oh, yeah.
Or what's the chapter in the book, only...
Wade Boggs only ate chicken the day of the game.
Yeah, yeah. You know, back
but,
to...
you know, there's even a more concrete one. Let's talk about falling in love. Is there anybody who hasn't fallen in love and you think it's magic? How did you and I meet? How did we both come to this party at the same time? I mean, it's just that life itself takes these turns that seem, well, you know, better than chance.
Well, if this is all on the upswing, why do you think it's the case?
I think a couple of things are happening. I think that science is one of the big gods of this culture, and we've become disillusioned with him. We feel betrayed by science in many ways, not just the bomb, which is the one that they have started. That was a big one. We began to realize that science wasn't totally good. And now what's happened is we're getting more sophisticated about science. And it seems like every day you pick up the paper and something that you thought was just the thing to do, like take estrogen, now turns out to be just not the thing to do. So we're being disillusioned all the time by science. Science, which we thought would save us, is not only, sometimes it's endangering us, it's not saving us. Although to a large extent it still is, but it's not the totally beneficent God that we thought it was going to be. So we're a little disillusioned. The other thing I think that's happening is that we have permission to look more widely. I think as the world has been shrinking, new religions are closer to us than they used to be. So ideas that when I was a kid in Texas, we would have just laughed and laughed about, like an elephant-headed god. You always thought that's the silliest thing we've ever heard of. But now we find out there are people who have an elephant-headed god. And so things that we thought were ridiculous, we're finding are not so ridiculous. Feng Shui, for instance. Pure magical thinking. Pretty mainstream these days.
Mm.
The other thing I think that's happening is, once again, science itself. The new physics. Scientists are talking like religionists. They're saying the same thing, say, that the Buddhists have been saying for a long time. They're saying things are connected. So sometimes the new scientists sound like magical people.
Hmm. The magical people, that's what you call them in Not in Kansas Anymore. And you say they have something to tell us. Who are they, and where do you find them? I mean, the people that... I mean, if we're all involved in magic, so to speak, you know, if we've got those three things going, the angel, the devil, and the scientist, what about the folks that are really out there and who are believers and it won't take them 10 minutes at the book signing to figure out, oh, yeah, well, I got a story to tell her.
Yeah, they have a lot of stories.
Yeah. So who are the magical people? Where do you find them? What do they have to tell us?
Well, there's a chapter in the book, you'll remember, where I talk about four ways that people make it across the bridge from where we are to where they are, from the mundane to the magical. So there are ways that you can see that they make that move. But when I was talking to Kat Ironwood, who's in the book, and she's a conjure woman who's at LuckyMojo.com, I found her because she knows a lot about hoodoo, the African-American magic. And I did an interview with that group, which, as you know, I studied with for a while. She said that she thought maybe magical people just simply had more magical things happen to them than the rest of us, and that's why they believe it when the rest of us don't. I don't know. Lots of magical things have happened to me, and I just ignore them as fast as they happen. You know, I'm sort of like my sister said to me one time after I did the first book on Lilydale, and I had given all these, you know, spirit messages to people, and I was just really stunned by it. And she laughed, and she said, well, in a day or two, you'll find out a reason not to believe it. It's just kind of in my nature. I think some people, it's not in their nature. They're able to grab it and run with it. Where did I find these people? Well, on a little piece of magic called the Internet. They're everywhere. And that's another thing that's happened. You know, if you think that you're an elf in Muleshoe, Texas, there probably weren't very many other people there who thought they were elves or vampires or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you could just go on the web and find all sorts of people. And they all get together and they all say, well, you know, I have this feeling too. Or, I had this magical thing happen to me. You can find somebody else who's had something like that happen to them, too. So it's the explosion of individuality and information that has come together through the Internet. I found them everywhere. I was absolutely stunned. I have to tell you this one story. I'm doing a book reading in Chicago, and I read the book, and I've been chatting with this guy who's behind at the coffee bar, and the coffee bar is there, you know, and he can hear me. And we were chatting and just kidding around, and he's just this great, funny guy. And so I give the speech, and afterwards he comes up and he says, that is the best presentation I have ever heard. That is so great. And by the way, I'm a vampire. Oh, okay. everywhere.
Yeah. Did you come across, you know, vampire? I don't, you know, like, okay.
Isn't that weird?
You know, did you come across anything you found disturbing, you found frightening in your research for this book?
Well, I'll tell you this. I wouldn't want to be cursed, would you?
No.
I make a lot of how I didn't believe it at the first. Lots of people ask me if I was scared. And I have to tell you, I was not, because I just don't. I'm not that big a believer. Nevertheless, I wouldn't want to be cursed. Yeah, people scare me who really want to do evil. It scares me that there are so many people out there now, and we see it in the papers. I see it all the time now. You know, if you're able to look at papers around the country, who are willing to do, who use magic for drug dealers, for instance. I'm kind of scared of those people because they want to do evil. But I'm scared of anybody, you know, who wants to use other people for their own gains. I mean, maybe we all do a little bit, but when you get to those real far out reaches, those people scare me. But here's what I found. I mean, I know I sound really just relentlessly upbeat, but everybody's afraid of black magic. And I was stunned to find that even people who you would think were involved in the darkest kinds of magic, A, would say, bad magic will come back on you. And so they believed in this kind of cosmic justice. And B, how very quickly they wanted to do good. For instance, you know, I always joke about the vegetarian vampire, but that was sort of the least of it. Just the contradictions in humans. The vampires, who are this group of mostly young people, you know, teens to say 30s, who really are not real numerous, but not real rare either. They have this idea that they need either blood or more usually energy in order to survive. You know what they're doing now? They're becoming energy workers. They give massages, and they've decided that their purpose is to circulate energy so other people have better energy. I mean, just think about this. What it says to me is that, sure, evil has its draw, but my goodness, so does good.
Christine Wicker, our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. Her latest book is Not in Kansas Anymore, A Curious Tale of How Magic is Transforming America. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Next, we go to a listener in Eureka, line 4. Hi.
Hi. I'm sorry. I have just come into the conversation. Maybe you've covered it earlier, but I guess when I first heard you, I began to wonder, is this magical something like sort of a subjective, feely-good, New Age idea where sort of everyone has it in their own mind? But I guess I'm wondering, is it subject to any outside verification or any standard? It almost sounds like anything a person senses or goes on within himself or herself can be magical. I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you.
Okay.
I think that's the question that we all ask right away. Can you verify it? Can you prove it? When you would ask that to the magical people would say something that I thought was very interesting. I would say, so you believe in magic? And they would say, no, I don't believe in magic. I've experienced magic. So for them, yes, it's a subjective thing that they perceive to be reality. The idea, and some of them do. One of them even said to me, I see myself as being on the edge of science, of what science is going to come to realize is the truth. Now, was I convinced? Did I ever see? There are a lot of people out there who were doing experiments, the parapsychologists and doing this kind of PSI research, so you can find that on the internet. I didn't look at it very much. I don't think most of these things yield to scientific inquiry, but they might. I could be wrong about that. But I was more interested in how people live their lives.
Is magic universal? Is it something found in every culture throughout history?
I think so. I've never heard of any culture that doesn't have it.
Yeah.
No. And you know, part of the reason, I think, too, is very basic to human nature. We have the ability, we are constantly scanning the world and putting disparate things together into a pattern. It's how we've survived. It's what one of the main things we do with this big brain is we make things into a story or into a pattern. We give them meaning. We pull them together. And so that's part of the reason why we see magic in the world. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, well, I think that's why we're drawn to fairy tales and fables.
Sure. We look for meaning. We look for lessons. We look for transcendence, and we find it. What was so interesting to me is that I became, after as I was writing this book, I became aware of how much it just seems as though life is magical. William James talks about this. You know, he says it just feels that way. He's not talking about magic there. He's talking about, does life continue? He says, you know, it just feels like it goes on, like this isn't all there is. And that's often how I think life is. It feels that way. You know, when you are, for instance, as I am right now, really contemplating trying to make a change in your life, and you pick up this book, for me it's an autobiography I started reading of Trollope, of all people. I haven't even read that much Trollope. Why? So I read this autobiography, and it has all these answers in it to the questions that I'm pondering. Now, is that magical? Well, it feels magical, doesn't it? It feels magical when you're thinking about somebody and they call you. And it's reassuring to us to ask that, you know, I'm just not sure. I don't know whether there's magic in the world, but I'm pretty sure that many of us won't live as full and good and healthy a life if we think that we're here in a meaningless world and life is nothing but a trudge toward death.
Mm. Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Urbana, line one. Go ahead.
Hello. I have a very quick question. Actually, I like very much the subject of the discussion, so I want to ask if you have your book issued on CDs. I like to listen books on CDs. Can you comment on that?
I don't.
Are you planning to do that?
No, we don't have any plans. I think I don't even know about that. I ought to talk to my editor about it. I guess my sense is that if the book sold well enough, they probably would put it out on CD. But I don't know where the tipping point is.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Sorry.
Is Lily Dale on audio?
No, it's not either. I never have talked about putting those books out on audio. I guess I ought to.
Yeah.
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 Because so many people now want to listen to them or podcast with them. So, yeah, so that's a good idea. I ought to check that out, and I'm glad he mentioned it.
Yeah. Other questions, comments are invited this afternoon. We've got about 7-8 minutes left in this portion of the program. If you'd like to talk with Christine Wicker, give us a call, 333-9455. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL.
Hey, let's talk a minute about Hegel.
Okay.
Philosopher. He was
sure.
Everyone
Trollope and Hegel.
Hegel.
I love it. Okay.
I want to tell you what Hegel thought truth was. Hegel is well known for being a philosopher who sort of took the religion out of philosophy. He looked at philosophy in a more scientific way. But at the same time, what many people don't know about Hegel is that he was very interested in magic, a kind of magic called Hermeticism. And in fact, some people even think that he was Hermeticist. That he was a magic, magical kind of guy, because he did study it a lot. He thought that truth could only come from using your reason, but also using your spiritual facility, that you couldn't get to truth with just one or the other. Karen Armstrong, or Karen Armstrong, I think her name's pronounced, she says somewhat the same thing. She divides knowledge and thought into two categories. One is logos, which would be the scientific kind of reasonable looking at the world, and the other is mythos, which would be the poetic way of looking or spiritual way of looking at the world. And I sometimes think that the reason that magical thinking really is rising in the society and that people are doing it or that we're talking about it more, is because maybe we've gotten a little bit off balance. We've gone too far into logos, and that human beings do need both.
Mm. Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Chicago, line four. Hi.
Thank you. How would you give a view on the matter of reincarnation or past lives?
Well, that's another thing that is really interesting to me when I think about the things that caused me to think... I don't mean, when I call it magical thinking, I don't mean anything pejorative about that. I just mean it's what science wouldn't allow. You know, when I was a kid, I didn't know anybody. People laughed at the idea of reincarnation. Now, I don't think people laugh at it. It's much more widely believed.
Like
it makes
the Dalai
sense
Lama
to people.
And others who have some conviction that he was reincarnated into the present person he is.
Uh-huh.
Well, we have different views, and I appreciate yours. Thank you.
Thank you.
333-9455. That's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Our guest this afternoon, Christine Wicker, author of Not in Kansas Anymore, A Curious Tale of How Magic is Transforming America. By the way, our guest, Christine Wicker, will be in the Chicago area for an event on January 26th, 2006. She will be at Hopleaf at 7:30 p.m. at 5148 North Clark Street on the second floor. You can find more information at www.bookslet.com/readings.html. We've got a couple of other callers coming in here. Let me just mention as we get them lined up to talk with you, Christine, that you are also the author of Lilydale, The True Story of the Town That Talks to the Dead. Was that the book that set you on course to do Not in Kansas Anymore?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
And this one has set you on course to do the book about the church. And,
believe it or not.
Yeah.
Yes.
How is it that you came to religion as a beat?
Well, actually, I was a Sunday magazine writer, and they killed the magazine, and the Dallas Morning News was about to set up what was to become the most highly honored religion section in the country, and it still is. And so I needed a job, and that section needed a reporter, and I'd always kind of been interested in topics of what's true and what's not, and so they moved me there.
Let's go now and talk with another listener. Caller in Savoy, line one. Hi.
Hi, thank you. I came in late, so I'm sorry, and I don't know if this is, my question is about the Wicca group that I hear sometimes some things about, and I didn't know if you had studied them or have any information about them.
Yeah. You know, they are the most numerous of the groups and the most high profile. You find a lot of people, a lot of teenagers seem to dabble in Wicca, and a lot of them then stop doing that. But to my surprise, there are also people who are third, fourth generation Wiccan. And these are people who believe in witchcraft. They're sometimes called witches. And they usually worship a male and a female god, and they are not devoted to doing any kind of evil. In fact, they think that if whatever you put out comes back to you, they call it the threefold rule. And there are quite a few of them, hundreds of thousands, at least here and also in England, there are a lot of them.
Let's talk with another caller before we run out of time this afternoon. Nope, they've left us. I guess they had to run and go do something. To wrap up here, what would you like to say?
Well, you know, I think one thing that people fear is that if they believe in any of this, that they will end up, as one spiritualist said, talking to the toaster. And we're all kind of scared of that. And I do think there are some dangers. And one of the dangers to me would be that you become so superstitious that you're afraid to do certain things. And, you know, you start to think that the world really does have magic in it, and a lot of it's malevolent. But I guess what I think is the most interesting is that people are really good at picking and choosing, at living with contradictions, at being kind of reasonable and kind of not reasonable. So I'm not as concerned by this as some people are when they say, well, this should be reasonable, but life is not reasonable.
Mm.
And people are able pretty much to stay on an even keel, even if they do believe in a few magical things.
Yeah. That reminds me of the story you tell early in the book about this man who was walking across Texas dressed like Jesus, carrying a huge wooden cross on wheels, and you wanted to do a story on him, and your editor said, he's a nut, and you said, no, he's not.
Not if you think like he does.
But you were curious about what makes this guy tick. Why is he doing it?
Well, yeah, you know, I think we have gotten so... I sometimes say, I talk to the people you don't want to, so you don't have to. Because a lot of these folks, we just have this sort of knee-jerk, you're a nut and I'm not, and I'm going to stay away from you. But I've come out with a lot more faith in people. I found that even some of the more bizarre folks, it was hard for me to keep talking to them because what they were talking about seemed so unreasonable and extreme. But the more I talked to them, the more I could see, yeah, I see why you believe that now. And I think that's valuable. Mm. It certainly, as the world shrinks, we need that ability.
Mm. There, we have to leave it. We're out of time. Christine, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
You're welcome. I enjoyed it.
Christine Wicker has been our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. Her latest book is Not in Kansas Anymore, A Curious Tale of How Magic is Transforming America. She's also the author of the bestseller Lilydale, The True Story of the Town That Talks to the Dead. On January 26th, 2006, she'll be in Chicago at Hopleaf at 5148 North Clark Street for an event. That event is set for the second floor there at 5148 North Clark. For more information, www.bookslut.com/readings. And also, you'll find Christine Wicker on the web at www.christinewicker.com. 8 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time, settlement prices should be in from the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Dave Dickey.
Thank you, Celeste, and good afternoon, everyone, where we see at the Chicago Board of Trade and Kansas City a lot of red ink on the screen. Pressure today came from both commercial and non-commercial traders. March corn fell below its support on daily charts at 211. The early word is that opens technical downside potential to the $2 level. We'll discuss if that is indeed the case this afternoon with John Hester of L&M Commodities. He is in Newmarket, Indiana. Wheat under pressure also today, selling attributed to non-commercial long liquidation. And by the midday count at Chicago, funds were net sellers of 4,000 wheat contracts and 4,600 corn contracts. In the soy complex, we also saw a lot of pressure today on good rains over the weekend in Argentina, the potential for more rain in Brazil, and what was construed as a bearish NOPA crush report. Let's go ahead and look at the particulars at the markets then. And as we always do, we will begin in Kansas City with the March wheat contract. It had a high on the day of 384.5, a low of 375, settling 375.25 down 8 on the day, July. A high of 383, a low of 375.5, settling 376.5 down 6.5. March wheat in Chicago. A high of 335.5, a low of 326, settling 328.75 down 6. May, a high of 346, a low of 337.5, settling 338.75 down 6.5. July, a high of 354.5, a low of 346.5, settling 348 down 5.75. September, a high of 363.25, a low of 356, settling 357.5 down 5.75. December, a high of 376.5, a low of 368, settling 369.25 down 5.5. March corn, a high of 212.75, a low of 208.25, settling at 208.75 down 4.75. May, a high of 222, a low of 217.75, settling 218.25 down 4.75. July, a high of 230.25, a low of 226.5, settling 227.25 down 4.25. September, a high of 238, a low of 235, settling 235.5 down 3.5. December, a high of 248, a low of 244.5, settling 245.25 down 3.5. March, a high of 254.25, a low of 251.5, settling 252.5 down 3.5. March Oats, a high of 192 and three quarters, a low of 185 and a half, settling 185 and three quarters, down 4.5. May, a high of 186 and three quarters, a low of 181 and a half, settling 182, down 3. March soybeans, a high of 577, a low of 569 and a half, settling 571 and a quarter, down 5 1/4. May, a high of 586 and a quarter, a low of 579 and a half, settling 580 and 3/4, down 4 3/4. July, a high of 595 and a half, a low of 588 and a half, settling 589 and 3/4, down 5 1/4. August, a high of 597, a low of 591, settling 591 and a half, down 6. September, a high of 595, a low of 594, settling 594, down 5. November, 605 for the high, a low of 598 and a half, settling $6 and a half, down 4 3/4. January, a high of 610, a low of 606, settling 606 and a half, down 4 1/2. March soybean meal, a high of 181.30, a low of 179.60, settling 180.30, down 140. May, a high of 182.90, a low of 181.30, settling 182.60, down a dollar. March soybean oil, a high of 21.50, a low of 21.16, settling at 21.22, down 45. May, a high of 21.84, a low of 21.53, settling 21.63, down 46 on the day. Settlement prices also in at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, where things were a little bit more bright than they were over at the board, Celeste.
That's true, Dave. Just a couple of contracts finishing lower today. We'll take a look at the livestock prices coming up here presently.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
January feeder cattle 112.65, the high, the low 112.25, the settlement 112.27 and a half, that down 20. March 112.80, the high 111.70, the low 112.45, the settlement, that up 47 and a half. April 113.20, the high 112.50, the low 113.07 and a half, the settlement, that up 40. February 96.95, the high 95.90, the low 96.55, the settlement, that up 97 and a half. April 95.25, the high 94.60, the low 94.95, the settlement, that up 55. February lean hogs 59.70, the high 59, even the low 59.47 and a half, the final price, that up 47 and a half. April 65.27 and a half, the high 64.55, the low, the settlement 64.62 and a half, that down 25. May 67.50, the high 67.05, the low 67.42 and a half, the settlement, that up 22 and a half. June lean hogs 71.25, the high 70.50, the low 70.90, the settlement, that up 12 and a half.